Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It's time for us to check in with Therese Davey, and it's all about Culture Night. Therese, tell us all about it.
I was bopping around to the swivel chair and the desk.
It was so groovy.
I'm glad there was two of us in it.
Brilliant.
Website of the week is culturenight.ie, a night I love and enjoy. There's so much going on, isn't there, Ronan, on Culture Night?
Such a good night. The first time I had an encounter with it was in Rome, and they called it Bianca Notte, which is like white night. And it's just basically everybody stays up all night. The museum are open all night, everything's all night. It's just literally a 24-hour thing, and it's so cool, you know? It's just place, everybody's going. So yeah, it's a really, really great idea.
So click on the website, culturenot.ie, click on your county and find out what's going on in your county. The important thing to do, and to do it this week, is because some events have limited numbers, and you may need to book now to avoid disappointment. Imagine bringing your children somewhere, Ronan.
I know.
Promising them something. Oh.
Yeah, that's right. Like half eight, half nine at night. and it's all, sorry, lads. And the kids would be very, very cranky after. They did a lot of Mars after that, I can tell you.
The car will be a mess on the way home. I'm having visions. Exactly, yeah. Anyway, so culturenight.ie. It's on Friday, the 20th of September. So put that on the calendar.
Very good.
And start booking for your events in your county now. I'm looking forward to getting into loads of Georgian buildings I never get into.
Oh, that's right.
I enjoy.
This is the cabin hunting, I tell you. I tell you, what a woman. What's out there?
We
have some deals, I believe.
Well, there's a great thing in deals at the moment, hand grabbers.
Okay.
That's a little pole with a squeezy thing at the top for picking up things without bending.
Absolutely.
And they're very hard to get, Ronan. I was actually going to put a call out on the radio to see where I could buy some, but I found them in deals at the weekend, and they're really useful for elderly people or people with back trouble.
You're absolutely right. And you know what? Who else are really, really handy for? Incredibly lazy DJs, you know, in studio trying to pick things off the floor. Hey, I forgot it over there. Oh, I missed it again.
I'm having another vision.
You never know.
Buy a few when you get them. They're so cheap and they're so hard to find. So buy a few and put one in the garden shed for picking up the rubbish when you're out on the road. One upstairs, one downstairs. I have one all over the house for my dad because I don't want him getting a dizzy spell. And so they're just so cheap and dead handy to have. And the other thing in deals.
Yeah, and you know the other thing that you actually do see people doing this. Increasingly, I see people on the road around here at least and up at home in Rounders. People out doing the kind of walking or jogging picking up the odd bit of paper, bit of litter while they're going. And it means you don't actually have to touch the litter, you know?
Absolutely.
So you can literally just, you can be having a little run along and just pick something up, throw it into a bag, and you just keep running. And it just means you're slightly separated from whatever it is that you're picking up.
And you're still doing good at the same time.
Absolutely.
So everyone get a couple of those, one of those essential gadgets in the house. The other thing deals have at the moment are the vacuum bags, which they always have, and they're good value vacuum bags, and they do work, and it'll tie into our job of the week.
Well, before you get onto that, you have to explain to people what vacuum bags are. Are they vacuum cleaner bags, or are they bags that you vacuum?
They're a vacuum storage bag.
Okay, so explain that to me, because I think I know what this is. I think I remember putting a duvet into one once, and it was like magic.
Brilliant. Amazing for duvets and pillows, particularly if you swap over for winter and summer duvets.
Yeah.
You put your duvet into the vacuum bag, you seal it up tight, put the vacuum cleaner into a little nozzle hole on the side, and it sucks all the air out of the bag, reduces everything down to practically nothing.
Yeah, you're right. It makes the bag tiny, and you're thinking, gosh, that's a duvet in there. It's amazing, isn't it?
And you can put it in the top of wardrobes or under beds or anything. They're great value.
Brilliant.
And the job of the week is perfect for, which is sort out the summer clothes. Have you done that yet, Ronan?
Not at all. Sure, I wear my summer clothes all weekend. You want to see me there in the bikini and halfway through January in the studio. It's really fantastic. Now, sorry, go on.
I'm getting very silly now. I don't need these visions this morning. So this is the week you're going to sort out everyone's summer clothes, decide what you're recycling, what's going to the charity bag, what you're going to pass on to the cousins, and what you can actually use next year into the vacuum bag. And be ruthless. And put some lavender or dryer sheets into your vacuum bags just to keep the smell nice.
Very good. Yeah, I like that. So it doesn't end up smelling just slightly a little bit kind of, damp or just off or whatever. Can I just ask you, when you say being ruthless about, not, you know, what, to, you know, do you mean saying, look, I haven't worn that in 6 months, or I haven't worn that in a year, and it's unlikely I'm going to wear it, even though I really, really liked it once upon a time, and it's time for the charity shop. Is that what you mean, or do you mean something else?
That's exactly it. And I'm not going to slim into it. That's way too many sizes below what I think I'm going to get to this winter. Yes. And I'm going to share it. Let's dispose of things I'm not going to use. Let's share it. Let's recycle. Let's get it out there and stop clogging up my wardrobe.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, first safety notice. What's your safety notice?
We're going to talk about hair dryers, and don't start laughing at point number 10.
Okay.
But the very important point about hair dryers, and all joking aside, is always unplug them. They're actually quite a dangerous thing to leave plugged in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't tell you. But you do talk to people who are involved in the fire service and they're saying somebody just left. You know, either a hairdryer or, you know, like, you know, the thing that you use for straightening your hair, the kind of, you know, those... You know,
hair straightener.
Is it a hair straightener? Is that what it is? But anyway, it's just like you can leave it. So easy to just leave it down on something and it can just... the heat is still in it. And it, off it goes, you know. It's extraordinary.
Powerful heat sources, absolutely, and be careful. So never leave it in. That's the first thing. But I want to talk about alternative uses for the hairdryer.
Oh, very good.
I defrost the freezer with mine.
Very good.
I dry a vase. There's a decantery thing that I can't get down to the bottom.
Yeah.
I blow dust out of the keyboard here at work.
Very good.
I have dried clothes in a hurry, but I found an amazing list of alternative uses. Removing sticky stuff. Have you ever had stickers or labels
or
Band-Aid stuck on something?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're telling me that you can do that with a hairdryer?
Yes. It warms up the gluey stuff on the stickers or labels and makes it easier to come off. It's an option.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And a Band-Aid. I heard someone, like my cousin who had the injury, thank you everyone for praying for him, has bandages on his head and they're very difficult to take off. A hairdryer on low heat will warm the adhesive and get those bandages off.
I never knew that. That's amazing.
Isn't that a brilliant
That's
one?
Really good, yeah. Really
Loosen
good.
Up wax, crayons, candle wax, never thought of that.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Dusting.
Yeah, makes sense.
Dusting, use it for dusting.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
Fiddly bits or fine figures. You know when you have those fiddly things that you can't dust them?
Yeah, exactly.
On the hairdryer.
You can't get into the little tiny little bits and pieces. Yeah,
no.
Very
no
good.
Way.
What else?
Water rings, never heard of this one before. Put the nozzle on a cool setting and put it over the heat ring or the damaged heat ring. It'll dry it off and supposedly help it disappear. Haven't seen it work, but...
So is that the one where you might have like some sort of a stain or a polish on the top of some wood and you put something hot down on it and it leaves a kind of a ring that is permanently there unless you do... Is that what you mean?
It's a water ring when you put down the wet glass on the furniture.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I understand.
Drying it out.
Yeah.
Quick dry of clothes, that's a great one. Here's a new one for the mothers and the young mothers. Nappy rash.
Oh, tell me. What do you do there? So you put it on a cool setting. And then and it just takes the heat out of it, the baby's bum.
Absolutely. And it dries it out gently, but keep it on a cool setting.
Yeah.
Look, did you see the picture of the stretchy shoes? That's a really good one. I know this one works. Have you ever had tight shoes, Ronan?
Yes. And you just put the hairdryer onto your tight shoes and it helps them stretch, does it?
Yes, you wriggle your feet inside and it stretches it out a little bit.
Oh, so you put it on and then you put the tight shoe on and then you put the hairdryer on it and literally your foot kind of does the stretching part. Is that what you mean?
It does indeed, yes.
Very good.
The leather softens the fabric, softens the stitching.
Yeah.
Same with sunglasses, seemingly. You put on the side of your sunglasses, makes them a little more pliable. Here's one for you that I'm sure would deeply concern you. It's the curly lashes one.
Curly lashes. I say I'm killed with the curly lashes. They go around the back of my ears and everything. It's terrible. It's ferocious. Go on, sure.
there are people who are dying to have them.
Yes, all right,
if you heat up your eyelash curler with your hairdryer for a few seconds, and I say a few seconds, warms it up and you get the curly lashes, but don't burn yourself, please.
Okay. Yeah, watch the old... Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, where the that can touch the edge of your eyelid, and that's very sensitive.
Yeah, that's one to be... Careful. Go into the kitchen with your hairdryer, and you can make your icing look glossy and shiny for a few seconds, which you're putting on your icing on your cakes.
Oh.
If your meat is stuck together in the freezer, has that happened to you?
Yeah.
Out of the freezer, all stuck together.
Yeah.
Unstick the meat.
Yeah.
Soften the butter for the icing.
Very good.
Salt and pepper. Did you ever get salt and pepper cellar and it's full of, they're stuck together? Did that ever happen to you?
Yeah, not particularly in our house, but I've certainly been like, you know, you go on holiday somewhere to where, you know, and it's just the salt has gotten very, very, you know, damp or something, you know. Mm-hmm. Does it work for that?
It does. You can dry it out. You can heat up the shakers if they don't melt.
Yeah.
If they're metal, or you can make sure you dry out the salt and pepper shakers when you clean them, so there's no dampness in them. That's often the cause. The container hasn't been dried properly. Apart from dampness in the air, that often can help.
Now, frozen pipes, I've definitely heard of that one, where basically you can use that. And I've you know, I remember myself even just leaving a light bulb. Not that light bulbs are that much good anymore, because they're not, you know, the incandescent types anymore. Painting helper, what's that?
That's where you can use the blow dryer, your hair dryer, as a kind of a blow dryer to help dry areas, and I keep it well away from it so you're not dispersing the paint. But if you need to dry heat, maybe on a door frame or something in a hurry,
yeah,
or needs a bit of assistance, there's your get out your hair dryer and do a bit of drying with it.
Absolutely.
And the last one is, if you're going on holidays and you've got your loofah or you've got those gloves or things and they're damp, and you don't want them all smelly wet in 6 hours' time when you unload them, get the hair dryer at them and dry out the toothbrush, the loofah and the cloths and things you're bringing with you,
which you might need
to bring with you.
Very good.
And
now,
dry them.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I let you go, Trey's little text in from Catherine for you. Hello, Ronan. Could you ask Trey where you can get Vim or Ajax scouring glue?
At the back of your granny's cupboard, possibly. Yeah.
I haven't seen it in years. I got to be honest with you.
Not at all. I got found flash powder literally in someone's cellar recently.
Yeah.
But yeah, very hard to get. If you go into some of the specialists like Lakelands or some of those websites that do household things, they may have an alternative.
Yeah.
Not the brand, you know, not the Ajax and the powder, but they may have an alternative. Or maybe it's time for the bread soda.
And what's the other thing that you always used to go mad about? Vinegar.
Vinegar,
bread soda and vinegar. That's absolutely it's like a wire brush and dettol.
Oh, next we do bread soda, the two of us, Ronan.
Oh,
bread soda it is.
It is.
Get excited. Get ready. Get ready.
That's right. Thanks a million. God bless you. When we have an item of clothing that tears or rips, or a household appliance that breaks, we automatically think to throw it out and replace it rather than looking to get it repaired or to repurpose it. Well, our next guest has taken great initiative and is offering a unique free service to repair sleeping bags and tents for Dublin's city's homeless. On the line now to tell us more, we have Jim Brennan, owner of Tara Leathers in Dublin. You're very welcome to the show, Jim.
Good morning, Ronan. How are you?
Good. First of all, Jim, tell us about Tara Leathers. How long have you been operating in Dublin?
Well, I've been operating on number 1 Tara Street since 1988.
Wow.
And I've been on 19C Talbot Street since 2003. And recently, I'm on Dame Street, 67 Dame Street, which is across the road from the AIB, beside the Olympia, just a few doors up from the Olympia on the right if you come in from the city.
Brilliant. Three locations. That's fantastic.
Three locations,
yeah,
exactly.
Brilliant. And more than 30 years, really, since you opened your first one. That's brilliant.
Unfortunately, yes. More than 30, yes.
Yeah, I have the same feeling myself, Jim.
I said it was 10 when I opened, yeah.
So, listen, I'm going to ask you an obvious question because of where you are located, but what alerted you to the homeless crisis?
Well, I had to move from number 1 Tara Street to number 5, and basically my lease had run out. I had bought into a 35-year lease, and the 30 years, I bought it when I was 5 years on, and there was no deeds of renunciation, so I was forced to move, and with developers and everything, and I was caught in the middle. So I had to do it around Christmas, and it was Christmas and New Year's, and I had to be out by the 4th of January. And as you can imagine, when you've collected stuff for over 30 years, it was quite a challenge to
absolutely
to gather up everything and move, you know.
Yeah.
But I was lucky enough. I bumped into a lad I knew, and I knew he was homeless, and he got another chap with him, and Paddy McAvoy. And Paddy's a really great chap, but he's fallen on bad luck for some time, even though he is doing great with My Streets and that. And he has come back to himself, and he plays a bit of music, but he's doing well. But it was his story and other people's stories that really alerted me to the issues that they have. It wasn't just the sleeping bags thrown around the streets, wondering why were they not uh, why were they not sent away and recycled, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Many of them could call and get a new one all the time.
Yeah.
But he's actually collected some, brought them in to me.
Yeah.
And that's basically how it started. And he dropped them back into the Simon, you know, and to Austin Campbell, who was operating my streets and that, you know. Austin is an incredible chap, you know.
So he would bring these disposes or these discarded sleeping bags that had ripped or for whatever reason, and he'd bring them to you, you fix them, and he'd bring them off to the Simon.
Exactly, and brilliant. Other things like that. And some individuals would also, who had a sleeping bag for a night or two, who would have tourists, would have stopped by and say that they couldn't get the zip running. It might be just a matter of tightening the runner just slightly, and then the zip would close properly.
Oh, right. Okay, because oftentimes it is problems with zips, isn't it? That's the thing.
It is. The runners can be problems, and of course, you know, they're quite and they're inexpensive products. A lot of them are brought in from low economy countries, you know, low cost economies, and they're produced either with high tech machinery or low cost labor. So they're arriving in the first world at a very low cost.
Yeah, but
it's the inconvenience of having to go buy new stuff and all that sort of. Some guys are attached to their sleeping bag, you know.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, like, you know, if somebody gets to like a particular sleeping bag and it really is working for them, and you know, you have little enough comforts really in on the street. Do you find now that the word has got around that people will know about you and come to you with their sleeping bags?
Well, I've had several people come into the various. Several of the shops, but it wasn't one of the other issues that these guys in the hostels have is their safety for their whatever they've got, and their phone is their lifeline. When they start calling, they have to call the free phone, and I think they have to call it at exactly 4:30. And if they don't call it at 4:30, they're put on the queue with a few hundred people, you know.
Yeah,
and but I basically created little hidden pockets within the rucksack. They all have a rucksack and a sleeping bag. It's almost like a military kit to a small degree.
Yeah, sure.
And they have it. And, you know, it's a difficult scenario that people themselves in, you know?
Yeah, we're losing you there, Jim. Can you hear us?
Oh, I can hear you perfectly.
Yeah, no, I've got you back now. That's great. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. The actual kind of challenges that people who are homeless, I mean, it's just such an exposed and vulnerable position to be in. So even something like stitching an extra pocket into your sleeping bag or onto your rucksack would be a massive thing. And is that for them to keep stuff in?
Yes, exactly. Whatever money they have and whatever belongings are valuables, you know.
And what
I've
kind
seen
of
a chap had his he had his bracelet from his from when he was a baby, you know. And
yeah.
His mother had died, and various things had happened, and his father was a drug abuser, and he wasn't actually, he didn't have any of these problems. He just fell on very, very hard times.
Yeah,
he lost fell out of education, and things went from bad to worse. He lost a job, you know. One guy was a night watchman.
Yeah.
And this lad now, I can't mention his name now, but
of course, yeah,
he was a night watchman. He once wrote a very prominent paper, and he's in his early 50s.
Yeah.
And he's just ashamed for anybody to see him, you know. And
yeah,
you know, it's quite humiliating as well, and you know, as you can imagine, for someone to lose their sense of self-worth and self-esteem, you know.
Yeah, I can see, Jim, that you've really been moved by the stories of these people.
Absolutely, yeah. It's incredible. Like from guys who are shouldn't be where they are put in with people who have medical issues. It's really. And it's treated as a criminal issue by their drugs and all that, and then they're locked up, and they get worse when they come out of, I don't know, Joy or wherever, or Clover Hill or wherever they're sent.
Yep.
And then the circle just balloons out of all proportion, and they're left on the sidewalks. They're left behind, you know.
Yeah.
And people always say, like, you know, that money is the root of all evil, but in my mind, poverty is the root of all evil. And there is a very clear path how they fell on poverty, and there are many of them. So in some cases, there is a few. There's every case by case is so extreme, so different. They're not all the same. People
of course
think they're
not,
all
yeah.
the same. They're all freeloaders.
Yeah.
They're doing this,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
doing that. Not even them do really care. They do really care. And the chap who was in with the pictures that went up on Facebook didn't want his son or his girlfriend to see it, you know?
Yeah.
To see, and,
yeah.
And the,
I know. There's a lot of shame around it, isn't there?
It's an indictment on society.
Yeah.
Not just the government.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, look, you're absolutely right there, Jim. I mean, if we keep blaming the government for this stuff and we're not prepared to do anything on a personal level, and which is why I think I was so moved by, you know, you're just simply doing the thing you could do, which is basically to repair those sleeping bags. Can I just ask you, you've had a reasonable uptake. Like, did you say you'd repaired over 50 sleeping bags over the past
week? At least. I would say
yeah.
probably close to 100 now, or 120.
My goodness.
Something like that, you
That's
know?
Amazing. So what would you say to other business owners in Ireland that might be in a position to do something, you know, something small, but something similar?
Well, there's always... You see, the problem is, if any of these guys come into the shop, or come, you know, people
yeah.
want to get them out as quick as possible, because many of them have an order.
Issues.
Have,
oh, that's right, I know what you mean.
Know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, but that's not the, all the case for all of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, we need to have a sense of giving rather than a sense of taking, you know? And
yeah.
we need to change society in such a way that, I don't mean to take on Marx and Engels and the Communist Manifesto by any means.
Yeah, no,
because,
I know
because
what you mean.
Only through creating wealth can anything be paid for. There's no point in going down the route of communism, have a pie and you can share it, but have a giant turd and share it with everyone
well,
else.
It's
communism.
It's also basic Christianity to just go out and help people who don't have anything.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Just Matthew 25. So look, I tell you what, Jim, it's an absolute. I just say more power to you, really, for doing it, and thank you for coming on to talk to us. So it's Jim Brennan, owner of Tara Leathers Dublin. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you, Roland, and a pleasure.
Agape are running a course this weekend that teaches participants how to share their faith with others. Really, really crucial and very, very handy, because sometimes we just clam up, don't we, at moments when we feel like sharing. I really should be saying something here and I don't know what it is. It will take place at the Irish Bible Institute in Dublin, old friends of ours, and in studio now to tell us more we have David Wilson, the Dublin coordinator for Agape. You are very welcome to the show, David. How are you?
Thank you, Ronan. I'm very well.
First of all, David, tell us a bit about yourself. You weren't always involved in working with Agape, were you?
No, I wasn't. I started out as... I went to college to study what I thought was going to be... First, my parents said, you're not clever enough to be a doctor.
That was nice of them.
So then I thought, I'll be a biochemist, because I read about that in books.
Sure,
the boys in the back room.
Absolutely.
They make the doctors look good.
Absolutely.
So I ended
yeah.
up as a microbiologist.
Wow.
With a specialization in genetics. So
my
that's,
goodness.
That's what
a
I
huge
did first.
Area.
So I did that at university, and then I worked in NUI Galway
yeah.
for a bit, and then I took the education diploma, and then I taught in school.
I mean, when you look back on it now, that was very prescient, because actually it turned out to be a huge growth area.
Well,
didn't
the funny
it?
Thing is that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And what I did back in the day was mapping the DNA of blue-green algae. I gave a year of my life to blue-green algae, and what is. That's now called genetic engineering. So
yeah.
I don't tell people this. I mean, I'm never
right.
going to say this kind
Looking
of thing on the
quiet.
Radio.
Absolutely fascinating, though, and such a big area. Because I remember kind of around the kind of 1981-82 point, and people were saying, this is coming up.
Yeah.
And sure enough, my goodness, we had no
yeah,
clue.
I have to say, though, that what I learned in university is almost no use now at all, because they're
yeah.
so far gone beyond it.
Yeah, it's developed and stuff. But to know that you were there, like in some way on the ground floor, it
yeah.
must have been very exciting, you know.
Tell me that. But, the guy didn't publish it in the journal because he said it wasn't significant enough.
After all that, after
yeah.
a year of your
yeah.
life.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah, that hurts. That's got to hurt. So look, tell us about Agape and the work that you do there.
Well, actually, while I was still at NUI Galway, I saw students' lives change kind of on the side. So I was working during the day and spare evenings and weekends. I was helping students to clamber through and find their way to Christ, but their eyes wide open to know how to receive Christ, their decision, but I was involved in giving them the information. But when they opened their lives to Christ, I saw radical changes.
Yeah.
I could think of one guy who was fine when he came to NUI Galway. After a year, he was stoned out of his mind.
Yeah.
And the Lord just totally changed him. So I thought, I could use a bit of this. Yeah. And I thought, well, I could live two lives. I could be a famous scientist most of the week, and then Tuesdays or sometime I could meet with students. Then I realized, this is not a video game. You get one life.
Yeah.
So that's why I opted then for Agape's work, which was at that time principally, and still principally, with students, helping them with the information they need, which is sometimes rare at a university, to get the information you need to make a decision about Christ.
Yeah. I feel for you, because I was thinking to myself, that was really my experience in college as well. I was so distracted sometimes by the outreach that I sometimes found it more interesting and more, because, you know, when you get touched by a really, really the meaningful call of the Lord to actually you realize I can actually introduce people into an experience, a kind of a connection, you know, an encounter with God. Why should I be doing all this study when I could be doing that? And actually, I found that last for myself, that last year particularly, I really had to just really just by act of will get down do my finals, because actually this is all I wanted to do, you know.
But I think it's a good thing, and to do good finals and to be a good microbiologist.
Yes,
and the world needs them.
Yes,
I mean, I absolutely support that.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's just, I love two things, and I couldn't go on loving both of them.
Both of them, I know. As you say, it's a very good point. One life, which is it to be? Absolutely.
And that's one of the things we're going to teach this weekend, is that success in bearing witness is simply sharing Christ in the power of the Holy Spirit and leaving God the results. Leaving the results to God. Let him worry about the results.
So in a way, not to feel the weight of responsibility of the act.
You're not going to push people into the kingdom. Yeah. You can show people where the front door of the kingdom is.
Yes.
And once they get in, you can show them around.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you can't make people believe. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Like the idea that the Holy Spirit is the evangelist, and I'm not really that. I'm just the person kind of paving the way to some degree. Yeah. You know, I love that. As I said, Agape are running a course this weekend, which is Friday the 13th, Saturday 14th. So can you just give us a little bit of background on what it is and what it's going to be?
It's going to start on Friday evening. So it'll be Friday evening and then running through all day Saturday. And it will be how to explain the message of Christ in Irish independent kind of English. Not theological English.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
What the average punter...
Yeah.
Vocabulary.
So true.
And then it'll be helping to answer people's questions. You know, when you talk to people, sometimes people have questions. Those who don't know Christ have questions.
Yeah.
So we're teaching people how to answer, not just the question, but the person. So we ask that question. Because often people have a pain in their life or an issue that you need to be very compassionate about. You know, St. Peter said, to always be ready to give an answer for the hope that is within you, but do it, he says, with gentleness and respect.
Yeah.
So we need to teach people how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're going to have also a practical opportunity to talk to, we've made arrangements to talk to new people over the weekend.
Yeah.
And we're encouraging people to bring a case with you, a case in your head, where you think, my cousin or somebody I know at work, or they're always kind of queasy, how am I going to talk to them?
Absolutely.
They're going to bring a case and we'll go through those cases.
It's absolutely vital, isn't it? I was just thinking about the way even your optimism for somebody can be a little bit crushing to them on occasion. And if, as you say, they come with an issue and they feel that you've been a bit judgy, they feel that you're judging, that's really deadly, isn't it?
And we're going to teach people also how to have gospel conversations, so they can have a chat with the person, bring up the subject of knowing Christ and the benefits, or answer whatever the questions. But then they need to land the plane in that conversation. Mm. Otherwise, if you see that work colleague tomorrow, they'll say, oh, there's your one, she's a religious nut. You know, I can't talk to her.
That's right.
You know, it has to be, you have to land the plane after every conversation. Say something like, did you see the match on Friday? Why do you follow that team? You know, you have no idea at all, or whatever.
What's interesting for me, David, is that you actually did the course yourself years ago.
I did.
And what impact did it have when you did it?
It simplified my conversations down. That's what I would say. It simplified them.
Wow.
And I have skin in the game here. I have a reason why this is so important to me. I came to know Christ myself through the work of my father.
Wow.
Now you say, well, that doesn't sound very interesting because, you know, a father tells his son to follow Christ, But here's the thing. My father had an excruciating stammer. He could scarcely speak. They couldn't converse like we're talking now. Because when he was 6 years old, he grew up with a fright because there was violence on the street at the end of the Civil War. The Black and Tans were doing mopping up operations. And he got this awful fright and he had a stammer from when he was 6 years old the rest of his life. And in the middle of that life, he chose that he would be the person who would take the trouble, it took it a whole evening, to explain to me what I needed to do to have Christ come into my life. I mean, I am forever grateful to this man. And that course helped me to get simple again, a bit like he was, because that's the only way he could do
it. He had to be.
He had to be.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. So just give us some kind of technical details. What format does the course take for somebody who's thinking? I would imagine it's quite a number of people now listening going, that's for me now. What format does it take?
It's good to bring a case, like I said, bring a case in your mind, somebody you're thinking of, and maybe come with somebody else who has similar thoughts. And the format will be a formal presentation from the front, a bit. Then there'll be a workshop where we have little groups that work on questions like, we're going to practice one-on-one how I would, you know, explain the gospel story to somebody else. And strangely enough, that's one of the most appreciated things in the course, is breaking off to just have little chats together. So I'll be person A, you be person B, and I will explain the thing to you, and you can be a little bit pushback and see how I get on. And then we're going to have a totally practical thing on Saturday lunchtime, where I've talked to people in various cafes around the district of the bottom of Foley Street and Talbot Street, and one very particular cafe manager was very welcoming for us to come and talk to his clients.
Really?
To his people sitting in the restaurant.
God bless that man.
So it'll be a gas time.
Yeah, that sounds pretty. That's pretty good. I want to go myself.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, are you doing anything on Friday?
Unfortunately, I am, but it's brilliant. So listen, how can people register to attend?
The easiest way to register is to send me an email at office@agape.ie.
Okay, office@agape.ie.
office@agape.ie.
Okay, that's easy enough.
It's on Eventbrite. They can search Eventbrite for Living and Telling.
Living and Telling is the name of the event.
Yeah.
And it costs what?
It costs €30.
Yeah,
and that's
a steal.
For all the books and workbooks and the dinner on Saturday evening.
Get fed and everything. Are you joking me? That's brilliant, yeah. So office@agape.ie and Living and Telling, if you want to just go straight to Eventbrite and check it out there. David, it's been an absolute joy speaking to you. Dublin Coordinator for Agape, thank you so much for talking to us this morning. Living and Telling Weekend course takes place at the Irish Bible Institute in Dublin this weekend, Friday 13th, Saturday 14th. And as I said, www.agape.ie, or search Living and Telling on eventbrite.ie. An unusual thing happened this weekend. A team representing Ireland became the number one rugby team in the world in its sport. That, of course, is rugby. And while everyone says this rugby world rankings are a bit meaningless and we'll have no bearing on the upcoming World Cup, nonetheless, it is truly a remarkable achievement and a fitting way for Joe Schmidt, Ireland head coach for the last 6.5 years, to sign off his last home game in the Aviva. This is what the great man had to say about Ireland's number one ranking.
It's a label. It's a nice label to get. And it's a nice first time that we've been in that position. So we have been lucky enough to tick a few firsts off with this group over the last 6.5 years, but that label is not going to be relevant to anyone. We all know who the favourites are for Rugby World Cup, and it's not us.
He's always running it down, the chances he did. That's right. Keep the underdog status going there, Joe, like a good man. In studio to talk about Ireland's newfound status and their chances at the World Rugby World Cup, we have our own Steve Johnson. You are very welcome to the show, Steve, as if I have to welcome you at all.
Thanks, wrong on. Yeah, it's great to be here.
First of all, Steve, does this world ranking mean much?
Well, I think yes and no. Okay. Because you'd say, you know, how can New Zealand before, you know, they were number one on Friday or whatever.
Yeah.
They then went on to nearly score 100 points against Tonga.
Yeah.
And take off a player for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And while we beat Wales and we end up with world number one. So a lot of people are saying, look, New Zealand are the best team in the world. On the other hand, you know, which means that there's something wrong with the rankings. But on the other hand, if they're not working now, they weren't working back in November when a lot of people were saying, why are New Zealand number one when Ireland have just beaten them?
Yeah.
Ireland have had a super season, and New Zealand also lost and drew, I think, to South Africa in the same year. So one way or the other, we've been, you know,
thereabouts.
We deserve being number one at some stage in the last 12 months.
Well, yeah.
And it is really an amazing achievement, the first time we've ever
I mean, you're
there.
Absolutely right. In that 12 months, Grand Slam, all the Southern Hemisphere teams, you know, or at least three of the four.
Well, we won a tour in Australia.
We lost
one game, but we won two. So it was really a fantastic year, and topped it all off by beating New Zealand. And in fact, their coach, Steve Hansen, said, we're ranked number one, but Ireland are the best team in the world right now.
Yeah, at the time. I remember that. Yeah, I remember that.
So, in fairness to him, you know, he was very gracious about it.
Yeah.
Now, you saw that you know, Joe Schmidt said, look, we're not favourites for the World Cup. We all know who that is. And he meant New Zealand. But the other really exciting thing is that it's now crowded at the top, which is amazing. Going into a World Cup, it's very, very crowded. The top five. So Wales 2 weeks ago were number one.
That's right.
Today they're number five.
So it means it's very, very
congested up the top. Absolutely. So there's an awful lot of teams who
were England in there for about a couple of days as well, or could have been.
They could have been, I think, if they'd beaten us, but this is a couple of years ago or whatever. So they were getting very, very close to being number one.
So the big question, of course, is what is our state of health heading out to Japan? Because the reality is, you know, we have, you know, two, you know, reasonable wins against Wales. I'm a little bit sceptical about them, because I'm not sure Warren Gatland really hit us with, you know, both barrels at all at any stage. And then you had that very, very chastening experience against England.
That's right. Yeah. So we lost 57-15 to England. It's a record loss, but we won our other three warm-up games. So, but I think it's interesting. We've somehow managed. We're in world number one, and yet we're underdogs. Yeah. How did we do that? What a trick.
It's a trick, yeah. Hey, Joe Schmidt, what a man.
And in fact, I was talking to Tony Ward last week. Yeah, he did the interview with us on prostate cancer, but we also asked him about the World Cup and Ireland's state of health, and this is what he had to say.
The defeat in Twickenham was a major setback. That said, I do see one real plus that's come out of all this. Public expectation has been dampened. And whether we like it or not, we don't like hovering around the number one spot in world rugby as we are at the moment. We do like to carry a little bit of that underdog tag. It's a huge World Cup. We're in a difficult pool, Scotland and Japan, two difficult games to start with. If we get over them, the quarterfinal is a real possibility. And then we have a nightmare draw, either South Africa or New Zealand. But let's get to that stage. And I think under Schmidt, I still have huge faith in Joe Schmidt. Anything is possible.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So it really is. It depends on who's hitting form, really, during the World Cup, who adjusts to being in Japan. You know, it's a way for... None of the favourites are playing at home.
Mm.
You know, so that'll make it interesting.
Yeah.
Japan aren't one of the favourites. And so everyone is playing away.
Yeah.
Which really does level the playing field.
You know, it's also interesting, and it's one of those things that always gets me, and it's what makes the rugby game so intriguing, but that if you get your tactics right, you can literally beat a team that's better than you. And if you get your tactics wrong, you can be hammered. And I was thinking about the last World Cup where we did that famous, you know, choke tackle thing and absolutely obliterated Australia, and then thought we were doing great and then got absolutely hammered by Wales, who we play every single year.
Yeah, but that's the thing.
You know?
And they were chop tackling us.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But it's like they got their tactics.
We had these big ball carriers and they started chopping us at the ankles. Yeah,
they got their tactics right against us, and we got our tactics right against Australia.
Yeah.
And we just weren't ready for that.
Yeah. And I think it's a World Cup that has a lot of great coaches, really great coaches. Eddie Jones is a great coach for England. Warren Gatland is an incredibly good coach for Wales. Steve Hansen has won the World Cup twice with New Zealand.
Yeah.
And this guy, Rassi Erasmus, who spent time in Munster, is really clearly an excellent coach and has turned around South Africa.
He really has, because South Africa were kind of dodgy a couple of years back, and Rassi went back to South Africa from Munster, and suddenly they're playing
really
great.
transform them. So it's very exciting. And as
and we have Joe, of course.
We have Joe.
Yes.
And I wouldn't want anyone else.
Yes.
You know, yeah, I wouldn't want any of those other guys ahead of Joe. And we have, I think we have an interesting draw.
Like, so tell us
weeks,
about the draw.
In 2 weeks' time, we're playing Scotland. So that's it.
So that's Sunday.
Huge game.
Right. Sunday. The 22nd, 8:45 a.m. I keep forgetting. The other side of the world.
These are morning games, 8:45, 8:15, 11:15, 11:45 are our group games. So, the big one is the first. You could say that the second one is the big one too, because it's against Japan. So they're the teams. If we get through those, we win our group.
And Japan could be really very tricky.
They could. They're playing at home. Yeah. It'll be, you know, if they start well against us, you know, they beat South Africa in the last World Cup.
Yeah, it is.
And in fact, they don't have. I actually think it's going to be tough for Scotland when they go to play Japan, because Scotland knocked Japan out of the last World Cup by beating them 6 days after Japan had played South Africa, which is really, or might have been even less than that, really unfair on Japan to have to play Scotland so
quickly.
Soon.
Yeah,
but Japan as hosts have all of the advantages in terms of they've managed the thing, and I think Scotland will have to play a team and then play Japan shortly afterwards.
And we're taking Russia on.
We're taking Russia on and Samoa as well.
And we're just saying they're just going to be okay, are they?
Yeah, well, certainly Russia. I think Russia were late qualifiers and stuff like that. So it'll be a chance as well for all of our squad to get a run out too.
Also, my memory of Samoa is that they're big lads and they can really beat you up if you let them. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not too up to date on their current form, but I know they had a Pacific Cup recently, which I think Japan won. I think they beat the USA. So I don't think Samoa will threaten us. I'd say it would be a real upset if Samoa beat us.
And you think South Africa possibly for quarters? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so we either meet South Africa or New Zealand or Italy in the quarterfinals. If we win our group, we play the second team, and if we come second in our group, we play the first ranked team from that group. Okay. So it's really, you know, we wouldn't want either of them.
And
in fact, that is, we will. I think when we play Scotland, we'll already know who's won between New Zealand and Australia and New Zealand and South Africa, because they're, I think, playing the day before.
Right.
So their big crunch game is right at the beginning as
absolutely,
well.
At the top.
So really exciting. There's going to be just an absolute feast of rugby.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking back, we had also recently in talking to us Alain Roland, who's a ref, right? Irish former ref. He's retired now, but he's actually the boss of the referees.
So he is
organising the referees for this World Cup. Yeah. So he's been back and forth to Japan, back and forward, checking out the facilities, all the planning for the World Cup, obviously with the referees in mind in his case. And he's very excited about Japan as a venue, and we have a little clip from him.
I think it'll be phenomenal. You know, for anybody who's lucky enough to get out there, I think it'll be an incredible tournament. They're doing a huge amount of work. It's been really well received, and we're all very excited about it. Ticket sales are going beyond expectations. I'd say we'll have, you know, close on 100% attendances at all the games, all the venues. The Japanese, they just love the rugby, you know, and that's in addition to all the people that are going to be travelling to the games. You know, there's a very strong base, you know, of Japanese who want to go to it anyway, and they're huge supporters of it, and it'll be phenomenal.
First time I've ever heard him interviewed. He's clearly from the Baldbridge Rollins, is he?
He did go to Blackrock College.
Had a bit of a sound of that, all right.
Yeah, and he played for Ireland as scrum half.
Yes, yeah.
Ireland
and
Leinster. He played in Leinster's first ever Heineken Cup match.
Wow.
So there you go. Wow. So he's such an impressive guy.
Yeah.
It was absolutely lovely having him in here. He was talking to Wendy about his career and things like that.
Wow.
But he is clearly excited about this World Cup, and there's nothing like playing in front of a packed stadium, and it sounds like every game is going to be packed.
Yeah, so and you know, you can rely on them to do it well, and they've done, you know, they've hosted big tournaments before in the past. The Japan and Korea World Cup, of course, comes to mind, and you know, they can do it and do it very well. Could be an expensive little trip for anybody who goes out there.
Yes, expensive.
It's not a cheap place to be.
But you can be fairly sure that there will be a big Irish travelling support.
And you can eat your own body weight in sushi, which of course is always a bad.
You won't even put on weight.
Exactly. Yeah. So are you excited about it yourself, Steve?
I'm very excited, yeah. I'm always optimistic going into these things. Yeah. Now, we have a very bad record in World Cups.
We have.
We are perennial underachievers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't get past the quarterfinal, and we have just such a tough task at getting past the quarterfinal this time.
Yeah.
But we'll be playing, if we get there to the quarterfinal, we'll be playing against teams that we've beaten recently.
Yeah.
New Zealand and South Africa.
Absolutely.
So, and Italy.
And Italy, exactly. Yeah, knows? Very recently in that case. Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, we've everything to play for, and let's especially pray for the lads that they don't get injured.
Exactly.
Because whatever about our strength and depth.
That's right, Joe.
Keep the prayers up,
that's
guys.
Right. Keep those prayers up. Very important. These are important prayers, all right? Okay. Thank you so much, Steve. Always a pleasure talking to you, particularly when we talk rugby. That's great fun.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.